lot of talented freshmen, the All-Americans, etc. Probably was not in play, right? My freshman year, because you're not used to 1,176 different ways to run a play. Like, there's paralysis by analysis. You get on the floor, they say down, set. You don't know what to do. Your heart starts beating. You run the wrong route. Coach pulls you out the game, and you lose confidence, right? Like.
Welcome back, guys, to another episode of Mic'd for Success. Today, we got a normal-sized me wearing athletic gear and a very professional-looking Joshua Border-Maybe here, who we're trying to figure out these tables, and apparently these tables are just not fitting us because you're just too built. This guy's ripped. But anyways, guys, welcome back to another episode where we got something super exciting. We have a very well-rounded athlete, someone that is not just an athlete, but has a 360 of everything you need in a guy when it comes to smarts, athletic ability. Basically, he should be on The Bachelor. That's basically what it is. So, welcome everyone. This is Joshua Border-Maybe.
Yeah, no. Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
Pleasure. He's from Atlanta, Georgia, and came all the way just to see me, right?
Yeah, I did. I came here to see this one of my closest friends. I love this guy right here.
Yes, Josh and I met at USC back when he was about to transfer. We met in the gym one day as we were lifting, and the rest is history. Yeah. So super glad that we both went to the gym and met at the same time as he was squatting 300 pounds more than me. So, but before we start, then we have our sponsor, My Whistle Box. Talk about our sponsor, My Whistle Box. My Whistle Box is a doubly encrypted service that allows you to keep your private information safe and exchange information securely between parties. My Whistle Box offers you e-signatures, privacy, notes, whistle pages, a ton of other cool features, and a better alternative than email. So if you're using email to send or receive private information, stop and start using My Whistle Box. Sign up today to get started with your free account. No payment required. There's no reason to not start today. Happy whistling. And now we can start the madness, the fun.
Yeah.
How was your drive in LA? I know LA is, do you miss it?
Yeah, driving around LA, not really, man. There's just a ton of traffic, right? It takes a long time to get from point A to point B. I was obviously just in Jacksonville with the Jaguars, and most of the time the freeways are clear. So usually it doesn't take that long to travel. But yeah, it's one of the things about LA I didn't miss is the traffic.
That's super fun. Yeah, guys, Josh has been all over the place lately. We're gonna talk about a ton of amazing things. He's one of my good friends that every time we have conversations, he's just mind-blowing me of all these ideas and perspectives that I also 100% agree on 99.9% of things he says. So we'll get into that today about the mindset of, you know, how to get recruited, to college lifestyle, being an athlete, to financial abilities, to just being a student of your calendar and being someone that is on top of their game, if it's sports or non-sports in everyday life. And so we'll get into that, Josh.
Yeah, man. Looking forward to it.
So why don't you tell everyone where you're from and the background, where you grew up, and take it away.
Yeah, man. So I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, Suwanee, Georgia, just a suburb of Atlanta. And went to elementary, middle, and high school there. And was fortunate enough to get recruited from there to the University of Southern California, where I was there for 3 years, graduated, and then transferred from there to University of Illinois, where I got my master's, and I'm playing football during this time, obviously. And then after I was done at Illinois, I went to Jacksonville, the Jaguars, and I was there for a good amount of the season and got released towards the end. And the season just ended last week, so I guess we're off, but I'm here now, and looking just to enjoy my off season and connect with future opportunities. So
how about we start with high school? Back in the day, you have a older brother, and someone that you looked up to all your years in high school and you played with. Tell everyone where you went to high school. How did you play with your brother in high school?
I did play with my brother in high school.
That's what I thought, but tell everyone what your high school experience was. What was it like playing with your brother at one of the top high schools in the country, and your experiences and kind of how you grew upon loving football and being a wide receiver and everything you learned at a young age?
Yeah, man, I went to North Gwinnett High School in Suwanee, Georgia. And like you said, it was one of the top high schools in the country at the time. My sophomore year, before I had my breakout junior year, we went to the state championship and lost to Colquitt County. But let me rewind a little bit. Going into high school, I was a basketball player. I played basketball my whole life, right? And I watched this documentary, More Than a Game, by LeBron James. And I watched it when I was in the sixth grade, and it showed that LeBron's first dunk was when he was 13. And, you know, I was on the basketball track, so I was like, man, if I want to be someone like LeBron James, I have to have my first dunk at 13. So, you know, dunking and jumping and athleticism was always huge to me. And I was fortunate enough to, you know, dunk by 13. But fast forwarding to ninth grade, I was on the varsity team my freshman year, but I didn't, you know, I feel like the shine that I deserved, if I'm being honest with you. And it was kind of discouraging to me. And I felt like my prospects would be a little bit higher in football just because I had size, I had speed, I had strength. And that's what they were looking for. You see what I'm saying? And I had athletic ability. So I just transferred it over in my sophomore year. And after that first year of playing, I had 10 offers, you know, so it was investment capital, if you will, that I can use to reinvest into myself and increase in my confidence. And, you know, I used that. And the next year after that, I had 32 offers, was an All-American, and, you know, the opportunities just continue to open up.
You started playing as a sophomore?
Pretty much, yeah, seriously.
You had no football experience before that?
I mean, I had played defensive end. Like,
did you play like Pop Warner? Or
yeah,
I don't know what the leagues are.
I played it 1 year. In when I was in the sixth grade, I played it 1 year. And then I thought it wasn't for me. But I think, like, the thing about me is I just transferred all the ambition and all the hustle and all the grind that I'd had in basketball and just transferred it over to football. And obviously, like, I felt like I was making up for lost time. And I wasn't like the best player like coming out, but I was just really athletic and I had a strong will. And over time, I developed more and more skill, understood the game a little bit more. And then when I did, you know, it started to take off.
Can you tell everyone about your day in the life as a kid in high school? I mean, sure. You started your sophomore year, you played basketball, you played football. What I mean, I'm from the West Coast. Our schools, I mean, we were a top baseball school where I came from, a top water polo.
Sure.
We took it seriously in terms of, you know, morning lifts and staying after practice and getting reps in. You were at one of the top football schools. The South is the South. Georgia's big powerhouse in football with all high school sports. What is it like? What'd you do? How'd you get yourself better, especially being a sophomore playing for the first time? How'd you excel your game over the, you know, the 3 years that you were in high school?
Yeah, man, it's hard for me to really explain it. I just feel like what's necessary is just that desire. And truly, if there's a will, then you'll find the way. I really do believe that. It's not like there's a blueprint, because it's not what you do, it's how you do it. And for me, it was an insatiable just desire that I had, in the sense I was always watching film of whether it was Sammy Watkins or Amari Cooper, anything that could inspire me and cause me to go past my limits. And I remember my freshman year, I actually came out to USC when I was in ninth grade, and, you know, I had the opportunity just to walk around the campus, and that was inspirational to me. It was the first school that I'd ever visited, and it was all the way out in California, right? And, you know, they were saying, yeah, we don't really offer kids from the West Coast unless we think they'll be first round draft picks. So my mind, when I came back to Georgia, I was in my mind just saying USC, USC, USC. Every workout that I did, every rep that I had, right, every project that I did, every assignment that I did in the classroom, I had an end in mind, and it was USC. So you have to find inspiration in order to do something great. It's not an accident, right? Anybody that ever achieves anything great, they're inspired to do it. You can't achieve greatness without inspiration. So find something that inspires you, you know, and then you'll do more than you think possible. And I mean, not even a brag, but you guys wouldn't know this if I didn't tell you. I mean, I did great in football, and I also did good in school. You know, I had like a 96 or 97 grade average, 4.0, took AP classes, just because like I wanted to be great, and I wanted to give myself every single chance. I didn't want there to be a reason as to why I didn't do what was in my heart and my mind to do.
What'd your mom think about this? You talk about your mom all the time. Sure. And your mom is the most important thing to you, raising two great sons. Did she push you? What was her mindset as a kid? Or you and your brother kind of just had the mentality to, we want to do well in school, we want to do well in sports, we want to make you proud and get a scholarship?
Yeah, I wasn't really focused on her. I think that what my mom did is she showed us what my life could be like, right? Because that's what her father did for her, right? My mom grew up in Nigeria, and she came from a pretty, you know, well-to-do family. But, you know, when she was young, her father would take her to Italy, would take her to Greece, would take her to London, would take her, and that seeded dreams in her mind. And that's the reason why she became, you know, executive vice president of the company that she works for, etc. So when I was young and I was tender, if you will, she took us out to California took us to Rodeo Drive, took us to Beverly Hills, took us to Los Angeles, took us to Orange County, showed us kind of like the best of really what like this life has to offer. And I was like, well, I want this for me. I'll do anything that I have to do in order to get it. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And so I think that my mom just showed us what our lives can look like, and that it was up to us to kind of take it and run with it, you know? So I definitely thank her for that part that she's played in my life.
Did you have a coach or anyone that inspired you guys in high school? Like, I had a coach my sophomore year, Brandon Loomis. Completely flipped me off a switch. Freshman, I did fine. I was a kid growing up. I was really good in baseball, really good. I played multiple sports. But I struggled my freshman year. I didn't know how to, you know, kind of divide basketball, baseball, flipping both sports, you know, playing multiple sports and dealing with school at the same time. It's your freshman year.
Right.
And he flipped me. He was like, I see the potential in you. I see where if you fix these things, you can be a great player.
Sure.
And worked with me every day after practice, worked with me during practice, and turned me as a player. Did you have a coach that did the same thing?
I did. I was blessed to have it, man, honestly. Having those people are huge, especially when you're young and you're, again, tender and you're moldable and you're vulnerable. Having people that see something that you can't see, that have better vision, have better perspective than you do, is extremely important, right? Because they can show you who you can be in years to come. And I had two coaches, Coach Bob Spire, who was our head coach, and Sean Jackson. And, you know, when I was a, you know, sophomore, et cetera, and just kind of learning the ropes of this football thing, he called me into his office and said, I think that you can self-actualize. And I never knew what that meant. Self-actualize, like, wow, this is higher language here. Like, what was self-actualize, you know? And I searched, and it's something in Maslow's hierarchy of need. That's the highest form of living. That's the highest form of consciousness. When you are who you are, you reach your potential in this life, and you don't leave any stone unturned. And that's what I always wanted in my life, right? I always wanted to become who I am. And he spoke that over me. And ever since, man, that's just been my life mission. And I had something to get physically, but just to internally, like an identity to claim, right? And yeah, it has definitely, you know, carried me a lot farther than I thought I could have gone on my own.
You still talk to them today?
Yeah, we're loosely in contact. Honestly, I should do a little bit better of a job, if I'm being honest. There's ebbs and flows, et cetera. Like, when you're up, you want everybody to talk to you, want everybody to see you. But when you're down, you kind of, you know, keep distance, et cetera. So I feel like that is a little bit on me and not, you know, keeping that relationship open. But they'll always have a special place in my heart.
So let's flip it a little. What was your favorite subject in high school?
Man, I loved the arts. I loved literature. And I love science. I love physics. I love biology. I love chemistry, right? I just love just the merging of...
Do you have a favorite teacher moment? Some one of your teachers that just you'll always remember it from high school?
Yeah, one of my favorite teachers, if she's ever watching this, Vanessa Galarte in AP World, it was sophomore. What was it called? World Literature, and we talked about like the hero's journey. Every single hero, every single person, right, goes through a journey. It's called the monomyth or something like that. It's called Joseph. I don't even know his name. It's like Joseph something. I can't remember. But every single story goes through a certain pattern. Right? The call to adventure, refusal of the call, denial, etc. You see what I'm saying? Most stories, whether it's Lion King, Finding Nemo, Hercules, they all have this pattern. And I definitely was like, man, I think that like that's what my life is like. And honestly, up until this point, it's been that way. So
that is super cool. Hopefully she watches us.
Yeah.
She might cry after listening to that.
Yeah, no, it was a lot to me. So yeah.
That's great. What about recruiting wise? It's a tough subject when it comes to football.
Sure.
Football is a beast when it comes to recruiting. From me looking from the outside, I didn't play it. You might think differently. I think there's like 5 stars, 4 stars. People get recruited off their stars. A coach doesn't really need to see them. As long as like someone thinks they're good, they're going to throw a scholarship at them. There's kids that are amazing that are in small markets and all around the world that just don't get seen.
Sure.
So they got to go to camps. They got to go to 7-on-7s. What did you do? Were you on a 7-on-7 team? Was because you were a top high school, you had recruiting?
Yeah.
Like huddle, what was it? The huddle? A huddle?
Yeah, huddle, you had huddle, etc.
What did you do?
I personally, like I said, I really didn't do necessarily anything other than just kind of like, you know, walk the line that was ahead of me. Fortunately, we had a high school that was a pipeline to, you know, a lot of top schools. We had Urban Meyer and Dabo Sweeney and Nick Saban coming in and out of our doors for the most part. So when it was my time, they were looking for the next crop of guys. You see what I'm saying? So the opportunity was available. I just had to take advantage of it. And yeah, I did what I did and was, you know, thankful to have been able to get recruited by most of the schools. So.
Right. And for the kids that are in that position right now, who don't go to a high school that has the accessibility to have an Urban Meyer and these top coaches just walk into your door from past experiences having great players. What would you recommend in their footsteps right now about getting recruited, getting seen, emailing the coaches, like if they have the ability to be a Division I athlete?
Yeah, man. At the end of the day, dude, like it's not even about how you start. It's truly about how you finish, right? Because like the cream rises to the top, right? And your gift will make room for you. Like they'll find you if you are that good. They might find you in high school, and they might find you in college, right? There's some guys that people thought were super good coming into college that didn't pan out. And there's some guys that people overlooked that ended up showing people who they were, whether they went to Tulsa or, you know, whether they went to, you know, Marshall or any school that's not considered, you know, one of these Power Five schools. If you take advantage of your opportunity, you will eventually get found out. I know that everybody wants to go to the schools that have the nice jerseys and have the big fan base, and like that's cool, etc. But if you're really trying to, you know, go to the NFL or go to the next level, like you just got to be faithful with little. And if you're faithful with little, then you'll be able to be faithful with much when that opportunity comes.
Right. What about the gym? What would you recommend kids work on when it comes to lifting?
Right.
I know ability is ability, but there's kids that have talent. They just need to get stronger. Sure. Like, me going through recruiting for Division I baseball, USC was my dream school playing baseball at. And I was told by recruiters, we only look for outfielders that weigh 220 pounds, that hit, you know, 10 to 15 home runs a year. We need a big guy that has speed, that has a 6'5", you know, 60. We want those guys. Anyone that's below that, we're going to overlook you. We want those top dudes that are MLB gear material. Sure. And I know Division I football is the same way. USC recruits guys like that. We want a 6'3 wide receiver, 6'1 built, like Juju Smith. Like a lot of kids aren't like that in high school. Or they don't grow until they get to college or get bigger. What would you recommend for kids that are in the, you know, middle stage of that?
Yeah, man. I mean, you can kind of craft yourself into what you want to be. And I mean, if you don't feel like you're getting enough from your strength and conditioning program, you can always do extra. And that's what I did during lunch while other guys were in the lunchroom laughing, making jokes, etc. I was in the gym, man. Right. I was in the gym doing extra bench reps, right? Or doing jump rope or on the Vertimax, right? I had a dream that I was trying to fulfill. I wasn't trying to be average. If you do what everybody does, you'll get what everybody gets, right? And that's what people don't understand. They want to just, you know, kind of just be in the in crowd and then hopefully, hey, where's my top two? Like, no, you got to do uncommon things if you want to be, you know, uncommon. And it's not common to sacrifice all those things that everybody wants, whether it's going to homecoming, going to prom, being in the in crowd of your friends. Like, there's a sacrifice, man. There's a price to pay to get to where you're trying to go. But I would say that the most important thing is lower body, man. I think so. Like benching and stuff is obviously extremely important, and you want to look good and have good physique, but having strength in your legs, your posterior chain especially, that's where all your explosion comes from. In any sport you play, whether it's baseball, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, you need that base in order to be strong and in order to have good change of direction laterally and vertically. But yeah, and then doing a lot of plyometrics. Like for me, I jumped all the time. I was either doing jump ropes or max
really
jumps.
Jumped all the time. Your vertical is we'll talk about that in a little.
Right. Yeah.
Vertical is out of the be Spider-Man right here for all means.
Right. You know, but I was always doing, you know, something, man. I didn't just rely on my strength and conditioning program. And if I'm being honest with you, push-ups, running, jumping. Truly, like if you can do that, you will be in. If you could just add that to your routine, like I would wake up and I do 150 push-ups every single day, right? And then I do 50 max jumps every single day, right? And then I would run, you know, like 12 sprints in my cul-de-sac, just always doing a little bit more so I could build up my reserves.
What about for technique wise being a wide receiver?
Yeah, definitely.
Because I know there's different positions with football, right? And you're not an offensive tackle, you're not a defensive lineman, like right. There's everyone has different niches, but for a Division I wide receiver that you became to be, what are the techniques now after being at USC and looking back at your high school self? Like, hey, that was great. I did this because I had the technique that they liked.
Sure.
What do you recommend high school wide receivers to have going into college?
Yeah, you want to be able to run the route tree specifically. Honestly, I feel like most of the development happens while you're in college. You see what I'm saying? Like they pick you mostly because of your potential. Nobody's a finished product. So a lot of the development does happen in college. So I'm not saying don't put a lot of stress on it, but you don't want to be a finished product, because if you don't have a lot of potential and you are already who you are, people are going to overlook you. Like, okay, like this guy doesn't have that much room for growth. So focus on getting bigger and stronger in high school. And then when you're in college, then that's going to be the time where you're going to be able to take your game to another level. yeah, just the simple things that you do in the individual periods, you know, in routes on air or in the receiver individual, you could just practice that extra and you'll get better. Practice truly does, you know, make perfect, right? Because it's a discipline, right? That's what practice is. It's a discipline in what you do or what you repeatedly do. So,
and all you need as a wide receiver is someone to throw a ball at you.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
I think people overlook all the cool technology, all the cool things today that you need to have, like a basketball having with that little hoop that throws the ball right back at you. Yeah. You don't need that. Yeah, all you need is a ball and someone to throw the ball to you. Yeah. So it's cool to hear from a perspective like you.
Yeah.
What was your experience? What was a Georgia kid thoughts about going to these Power Five schools and your experience on the recruiting cycle? Like, what do they do in the process? How did you end up at USC?
Yeah, that's a great question. Obviously, you're getting the best of all these schools, and of course, a lot of the schools that recruited me were some of the top schools in the country. So they definitely had the resources, if you will, to,
because USC picked out a Georgia kid to come to LA.
Yeah, they did.
And was it from your mom taking you at a young age to LA and showing you what the LA life is? Is that the reason why you chose USC?
Yeah. And like a lot of the top football schools, if you will, are in the Southeast. So I was pretty well acquainted with Georgia and, you know, Florida and, you know, Clemson and just, you know, those schools in the area. And they were great. You know what I'm saying? But football does have a expiration date. And I wanted just, I don't know, I didn't want to be short of any experience, you know what I'm saying? I feel like there's five components, if you will, that are important to somebody that's going into college. Obviously, the academics are extremely important. You want a school that is respected academically. It's not just a degree, like it's a degree that actually has weight to it, right? You want a school that obviously is great, has a great athletic program, specifically the one that you are in. You want a one that's in a great location, right? And one that isn't super cold, right? That's part of the reason why, like, I didn't initially choose to go to Ohio State because I'm a wide receiver. I want to play in good weather if I have the option to, right? Why would I not, right? Place like LA. You want a place that, you know, is good for whether it's internships or connections or networking. That way there's an industry that you can fill yourself into, you know, when your playing days are over, you know? Like, I love Alabama, but what industry does Tuscaloosa have? And this isn't to crap on them or anything, but this is the thoughts.
You're totally right from us.
You see what I'm saying? And then number five thing, if you're, you know, young recruit, you know, and you like girls or whatever, school that has pretty girls, right? Like, that's something that, you know, and USC checked off all the boxes. The only thing I had to get over was the distance, right? Going from Georgia to Los Angeles.
Right.
You know, but USC offered everything and no other school could do that. Like Stanford, it had great academics. It had, you know, good athletics. It had great location. Right, you know, girls weren't all that, you know what I'm saying? I don't know. You see, yeah, but whatever. But you see what I'm saying? And then Ohio State was cold, right? And Alabama, it's like, oh, the education, right? Like everything had a flaw except for USC. I felt like I was getting everything that I wanted in USC, so it was an easy choice for me.
Do you think a lot of top athletes overlook that? Because you are a well-rounded person. Your mom raised you like that, where she says academics first, sports second.
Sure.
If you tear an ACL and you're out for 4 years and football doesn't come in the future, you need to have a degree. You need to have something that will get you a job, have a back network, and USC fit that. But do you think a lot of kids in today's world, we're not putting down Alabama, we're not putting down Ohio State and any of these other schools, but do you think a lot of top recruits overlook the academic side when getting recruited?
Yeah, I just don't think that they know how important it is. You see what I'm saying? I don't think they have the consciousness or the awareness to look at it. You see what I'm saying? It's not that they do it intentionally. It's just that they don't have the sensitivity. I'm thankful to have had, you know, a mom who understands and a dad that understands the importance of, you know, having that backing. But I mean, I wouldn't blame these guys just because they probably don't have anybody in their ear that's telling them that.
Right. But explain to everyone what USC was like to you. What was a day in the life of USC and being around normal kids and kids that are talented in certain things? So we are a liberal arts school. People are really talented and really cool, unique, like cinematic arts and broadcast. There's a lot of things to go around that a lot of other schools out there in the world don't have, especially with a top football program.
Yeah. And like people understand, USC is not an average school, right? To go to USC, you have to be really rich, really smart, or both. There's no average person walking in those streets, right, within the lanes to class. Like there's no average person. And, you know, someone once told me my freshman year, that really opened my eyes, the least successful people to leave USC are the student athletes that don't go pro for the most part. You see what I'm saying? Those are the ones that are the least successful. And obviously, like, there are some exceptions and there are some student athletes that don't go pro that take advantage of it. But for the most part, especially like in the revenue generating sports like basketball, football, right, baseball, the student athletes that don't go pro, those are the ones that are least successful, leave the university. Not that they're not successful, but just in comparison to their peers, they're not. Because the summers that we're training and we're working out, we're not able to maybe get the internships that we would like, other students are getting those. They're getting the experiences. They're making the connections, right? They're getting that network. And then they're more prepared when they graduate,
right? Right?
And they have more of a firm foundation to kind of build their life off of going into the future.
Did you have a moment from USC when meeting a kid in class or having a meeting a teacher and just being like, wow, I'm at a school where this kid's not playing sports, but this kid's brilliant. We were worked on a project. Like, this is just so cool to go off of each other's differences and, you know, day in the life of each other. Where you're an athlete, but you also care about school. Did you have moments like that dealing with, you know, top students and just different kids?
Yeah, no, like all the time, every day. Like, it'd blow your mind. Like, this person is brilliant. Like, this person is truly like a genius. So many different people, whether it was friends that I had that were in the Iovine Young Academy, right? The Center for Innovation. Like, those kids like were like genius level kids in Mensa in high school, etc. So yeah, it was really humbling. And I thought I was smart, and I still do believe that I am. But these guys just were so creative. It was like a pure expression of ingenuity. So yeah, it was awesome to experience.
What was your major?
Business administration, you know, finance and strategic management.
So what were your three favorite classes at USC?
Yeah, definitely. It was, what was it called? BU8302, which is business strategy and communication, which is awesome. It teaches you how the soft skills needed in order to be a, you know, a business executive one day. And then also our strategy class, what was it called? It was MOR. I can't remember, but it was our strategy class in which we reviewed a lot of different case studies from businesses that were struggling and tried to figure out kind of what the problems were. I'd say those are my top two classes.
Did you say if you would have gone to any other schools, you wouldn't have these classes?
I just don't know. You see what I'm saying? Like, I just don't know. And that's something like I want to know. And
do you have any best friends that went to all these other top schools? Went to Georgia, went to Alabama.
Yeah.
Like, comparing your experiences with theirs, regardless of football, what any differences? Like,
yeah, I'd ask them how hard their classes were. Oh, it's not that bad. You know what I mean? As long as you go to class and you do your work, you should be fine. Or like, that was the bare minimum. If you wanted to barely pass, that's what you did at USC.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like, you know, you go to work, you know, you do that and then some just to put yourself in position to maybe get a C or a B.
Yeah.
You had to really kill it in the class to get it.
Especially when there was a curve.
Yeah, especially when there was a curve.
99% of classes is getting an A on that test. And when there's a curve, you're getting screwed if you get a B+.
Exactly. So it was, yeah, this is, I mean, I, like I said, I've never struggled academically. And not like I struggled when I was here, but A's would come like this to me when I was in high school and here. Yeah, man, it was difficult. I got more B's than I got A's, you know, and it was something I had to, you know, get used to. So
for kids that want to know what a typical day in the life of a Division I athlete, especially someone like you that's well-rounded, cares about their school, was it hard to juggle football and academics, or also it depends on what your major is? I know kids that did architect, they have no life. It's
right.
Super hard. Or pre-med. Was it functional to do both at the same time? Did you see a lot of athletes in the football program studying with each other and caring for school?
I feel like it depends on the degree that you have, honestly. I mean, I was in the business school, which is, I'd say, one of the better schools at USC. Some guys, I mean, they were, you know, doing African-American studies, gerontology or whatever, so they had maybe less of a workload on them. I know for me it was difficult, especially the first year I was there, having to take business calculus, having to take operations, right? And this is some of the times you have to take it during the season. And it's like having two full-time jobs. And the thing people don't understand is, like, the business student that you ask to come to study business, that's all you ask him to do, right? The engineering student, that's all you ask to do is to study engineering. We're asked to study business, or I was at least, and then also play football, which is a full-time job in and of itself. You're giving 40 hours a week to it. You see what I'm saying? So it's just like the interest is divided and something has to give, right? You have four things I feel like that are essential, right? You have school, you have football, you have your social life, because you are an organism, a human being, right? You need social connection. Then you have sleep. But the thing is, you can only choose three as a student athlete. Only three of them that you can choose. So something has to give. Sometimes it's your sleep, right? Sometimes it's your school. Sometimes it's your football performance. But all four of them, if you will, are essential. And
so what was like your day in a life? Like, take me through a Monday through Friday of what you did during prime time season, prime time schooling.
Yeah, I mean, like, sorry, you'd wake up and you'd wake up and obviously you'd had like a morning run, right? You had the morning runs in the morning, and then boom, you would shower, you get breakfast, and some people had 8 a.m.s. So 8 a.m. classes, you go to class, and we usually had our class blocked from like 8 to 2. So those are the only times we could take classes from within those 6 hours, right? And then after you finish class, hopefully you had 30 minutes, et cetera, before 2 o'clock to eat lunch, and then we'd start meetings. Meetings from 2 to 4, practice from 4 to 6, and then from 6 to like 7 or whatever, we would watch film. Do you see what I'm saying? And that was how it was like every day.
Where'd you study?
Well, then afterwards, okay, then after from 7 to like 10, that's when you had study hall, right? And during that period of time, you either had a tutor, you had a learning specialist. Those are the times that you had to complete your work. And that would repeat every single day. So
that's Monday through Thursday. Friday's a travel day.
Exactly, right? And
I assume you probably don't study on Fridays. That's just not...
No, you know, there's no chance. Your mind is on the game. But you think about it like that's from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m., right?
You're nonstop.
See, people say, oh, investment banking is so hard. Well, this is basically like investment banking hours. Like, this is 16-hour days.
And your body's getting destroyed through it. Going 100%. Like, you're destroyed.
Mental and emotional grind. It's not just, oh, mentally, it's a psychological warfare. No, you're having that, and you're also having a physical grind. Because you're in the, and then you're in practice and you can get, you know, hurt, or you see what I'm saying? You're sore from practice. So it's just like a complete whirlwind. It really will test the strength of your soul, right? So it's, yeah.
All right. So USC is a beast of itself. Because sure. You're saying you go from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. every single day. That's with a perfect world. Everything's going well, sure. Especially when you're not getting injured.
Sure.
But the things come with, you know, mental health issues. And I know right now in this world, people have a lot of mental health issues and trying to stay with a good mindset. How do you deal with that on a daily basis as an athlete, as a Division I football player? Because all you see, like media is a big thing. Like USC, they sucked for a couple of years and people would go off on them. They'd win a game. People are now loving them. Players too. Players have a bad game, and now you're getting, you know, shot on the internet saying you're awful. You probably had to deal with that, and had to deal with friends dealing with that, like JT Daniels when he got injured, and all these things.
Sure.
How do you deal with that in the mindset of mental health?
Yeah, and like I was telling you before, like there's four things that are essential, I feel like, for your well-being, you know, while you're in college, especially if you're a student athlete. Obviously, one is sleep. Two is you know, being able to do in school, good in school. Three is your sport. And then four is your social connection. And like I said, you can only really choose three. Something has to give. And when something gives, it will eventually, inevitably end up infecting your mental health. Because if you don't feel like you're prepared, because let's say football takes a back burner, then when they start calling plays and you're in and you don't know the play to run, then you start to have anxiety. You see what I'm saying? Or let's say, like, you know, you don't study for your tests, et cetera, because that's what you put on the back burner and you want to spend time with your friends. Then you start to fail, and then you're ineligible and you're not able to play in the game. You see what I'm saying? And then that starts to affect you, and you dug yourself into a hole. So the mental health is going to be challenged, and the state of your mind will definitely be in the crucible of the fire. So I feel like going into it, you have to understand that and have a good plan, right? Whether it's in the morning, waking up and just breathing and just practicing, recentering yourself or whatever it is, just so that when these things come, because they will, that you'll be prepared and they won't affect you as much as they might affect some other people. Because some people never recover.
Right.
And they never end up reaching their potential because they were plagued, not by anything or anybody else, but their own mind.
Do you think media gets involved in this? Do you think media takes a big part in a lot of your friends? USC is a media capital of the world. It's UCLA also, like LA schools, you have a million people on top of you expecting you, just like a pro athlete, to do well.
Sure, yeah, the pressure is definitely there, and I feel like that's what plays into it, the pressure, the expectation that you have. So that's also obviously a factor, you know, and you have good and you have bad games, and, you know, I feel like we do learn how to shut things out, and, you know, after you have a bad game, you expect that, so you might take Twitter, Instagram, or whatever it off of your phone. But, yeah, the pressure is probably the biggest factor, which is, and it can make or break you.
What was the pro day like? What was the goal and the mindset going into that to showcase to the NFL prospects, which you did? The coaches and the recruits that were recruiting all these, you know, guys that maybe aren't on the top of their charts. What was a way to showcase them that you have the ability to play in the NFL?
Yeah, basically, yeah, just showing how you move, showing how athletic you are, and showing how your skills can probably be translated. Because the truth is, like, some guys are underutilized in their offense, et cetera. So they're trying to see, okay, like, what gems can we find? What diamonds in the rough can we find? Right, in these pro days, You see, so it's time for you to show out. And it got, in the event that you weren't able to maybe explode in the way that you wanted to during your college career. So it's definitely another opportunity for you to increase your draft stock.
Do you recommend it's a big deal when it comes to
I do. I mean, athletes? I think it's a big deal. I think it can be. I mean, obviously we saw what it did for DK Metcalf. Somebody that I actually got to know when I was at the Nike opening my junior year. And yeah, because I knew this, but the truth is, like, you don't have the power to open somebody else's eyes. You can know something, but until they see something, they're not going to know it themselves. So I feel like that's what the combine can do. It can open somebody else's eyes, like, whoa, okay, well, that was always there, but I never saw it. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Because he was limited because of his offense or because of the scheme, et cetera, whatever it is. So I do feel like it's important. It's not the most important thing because you also have to have the substance and the base to go with it, which is the film. But it can add to your film and solidify you as a draft prospect.
Does everyone on your team participate in this, or is it something where your coaches pick their guys they think?
Everybody that's, I guess, draft eligible or that's looking or wants to, you know, continue their career and go into the NFL, whether that's an undrafted free agent or whatever it is, participates in it.
What do you do? You run a 40-yard dash.
You do a 225 bench test, see how many times you can rep 225.
So what does that even do? I see guys break records all the time. What's the purpose of if you're a 5'8 cornerback benching versus, I get an offensive lineman or a defense lineman, but sure, a cornerback benching, why does that matter? Or wide receiver, why does that matter?
Some matter more than others for different positions. I feel like that's more so for like linemen, just like how the 40-yard dash isn't for linemen, right? 40-yard dash is for receivers and tight ends and running backs and cornerbacks, right? You know, so, and I'd say like the 225 test, it's just a baseline test, but it's more so for offensive linemen and defensive linemen. But it also can show muscular endurance and strength. Like, can this guy, you know, if he's a receiver, can he get off the press? If he's a cornerback, can he jam? You see what I'm saying? If he's a running back, does he have strong arms to where people can't arm tackle him? You know what I mean? It just puts in people's minds a projection, okay, this is the type of guy this guy will be in the NFL.
Right. And how do you even train for something like that? Because you guys go through a day of, we're doing 4 sets, 12 reps. Now you get a bench press and you got 225. You got to bench it as many times as you can.
Sure, yeah.
Like, how do you go from just an average trying to build muscle to now we need to let this go for as long as I can?
Yeah, and obviously that's where there's so much money put into the training, right? Like, people will fly out to different parts of the country. Like, I was out in Scottsdale, right? I was trained out in Scottsdale, and it's like a 8 to 10 week process. Some people will go to Miami. Some people will go to Los Angeles, right? Some people will go to Dallas, and they'll go to these top training institutions in order to, you know, get in the best shape of their lives. And that's what we do. You know, we gear for the pro day, we gear for the combine, and we practice a lot of these things just to make sure that we're ready, you know, when we're tested. So
that's super cool. Is there any other what else do they do at the
The broad jump.
The broad jump?
Yeah, the broad jump. So, yeah.
And how do you train for that?
Yeah, it's all about explosion. Like I said, lower body explosion, right? Like, whether it's you're doing squats.
I assume you excelled at that one.
I did. My baseline, so my first day of training, you do baseline testing just so they can kind of measure your progress when you leave. I jumped 11'7", 11'7", which I think would have been number one at the combine this year. I'm not sure. I can't remember. But, yeah, you do that. What else do you do? You do the three cone. You do the L cone, you know, change of direction drills to measure agility just to see how athletic you are, how coordinated you are, how well can you move on the field.
I don't know football. I mean, I didn't play football. So to the point is, this is all new to me. I've seen friends, like someone like you, going through it, but I don't know what it's like in a day to life on training. I have proactive sports next to me in Sports Academy. Proactive is a big one for NFL prospects coming in and training. And at my high school, I would see them do these drills. I never understood why they did it. So this is music to my ears about learning about the pro combine and what people need to do to showcase themselves.
Right.
But for a college kid or a high school kid going through a pro combine or a college combine, because they kind of do the same thing, do you think they need to focus on this to be the best they can in every attribute of what you guys need to do to showcase to get to the next level? Or do you really think focus a lot more on your game, more or less on how far you can jump, how long you can push, how fast you can be?
Yeah, there'll come a time and place where, you know, if you're awarded the opportunity where you can prepare for these things. That's why it's only like 8 to 10 weeks, but it's pretty intensive. I feel like the most important thing for you to do is, yeah, focus, learn your playbook, right? Learn, if you're an offensive player, learn different coverages. If you're a defensive player, learn different route patterns. Like, learn to be the best football player that you could possibly be, because that's what's going to put you in the position to be able to impress scouts at your combine, at your pro day. I feel like that's the basis. This is what we're talking about now is just the icing on the cake.
Do they ask your coaches about that? Hey, does Josh, is he really good at like remembering like his plays?
They go back to your elementary school and ask the janitor what you were like, you know. These guys are like FBI detectives, man. They try to figure out who you are and they try to find your character. They go back as far as they need to in order to, because obviously when you interview with them, you're going to tell them everything that you feel like they want to hear. So they're trying to figure out, who is this guy really? And when could he have slipped up when he was talking to, you know, a substitute teacher? Like, they'll try to find dirt on you in order, because everybody's slated, right? And they're trying to figure out, all right, who has the least dirt and also is the best player? That's the guy that we want.
Right. Is the college playbook huge? I mean, you don't have to say.
College or NFL playbook?
I know NFL is even bigger, but
yeah.
College playbook, like, what was your, we'll go back to college just for a second, because a lot of kids probably worry, being a high school athlete, is there a lot of plays in high school?
Not really. I'd say
it's more just your ability and you just get around cheating that. But you get to college and you got 1,000 plays. Every week you have new plays, you have old plays. You got to remember. Is it hard to memorize this stuff? Like, how do you memorize these plays? Is it studying or doing it? Like, I'm someone, I need to do something to remember it. And that's what was me in basketball. Basketball is the same way. To remember a play, I needed to do it.
Sure.
I can't just look at a board and say, that's what I have to do.
Sure.
What'd you do?
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, that's why a lot was gone into it. We had a lot of walkthroughs, right, during training camp, to where hopefully you studied the night or the nights before. So at least it was in your mind, right? That seed was there. And then the walkthroughs, right, and the jogthroughs that we did would germinate that seed, right? And
right.
It would, you know what I'm saying, allow it to slowly start to grow. But you had to have that seed there in order for it to grow, right? So it's just a good basis in your mind, just so you can at least see it in your mind's eye of what it will look like. And then you can jog through it, or you can walk through it, jog through it, and then you can run through it in practice.
Because were plays called like names or numbers, or how do you being a, I mean, probably a little different for a wide receiver, like an offensive line, you got to go this way, that way for this play. Every play, it's a different blocking technique.
Sure.
How do you know what is what? Like in the moment when you get smacked down by, you know, a 250-pound guy, and you get back up and you call blue. Okay, what's blue again? Like, did you have moments you just froze?
Oh, yeah. 1,000%. But, like, in order to eliminate that, right, you have to be extremely sharp. You have to know it like the back of your hand to where it's called, and then you already just, by mode of operation, just go to where you need to be. That's why study was important. That's why watching film was important. As many mental reps and physical reps are limited, et cetera, just because you don't want to, you know, the body has limits and you don't want to, you know, get too sore, et cetera. But you can watch as much film as you possibly, right, have the time for.
Right.
So that would also in your mind just kind of make it easier for you to find, right? If it's in the back of your mind because you haven't studied it, you're doing all this mental gymnastics just trying to find where it is. And is it there? Oop, play already snapped and you didn't run the route. And now you're out on the bench and you're watching, right? So, but it brings it to the forefront of the mind the more that you study it. It's like a meditation in a sense. The more that you repeat it in your mind, the closer to the front of your mind that it gets, and the easier it is to grab onto you when you need it.
How many plays did you have to memorize every week?
There was one. Oh, every week? It depends. It depends on what was in the game plan. If it was a simple game plan.
Did they add like 20 plays for like a new team, or you coming into the season, you know, 1,000 plays?
For the most part, it was concepts, right? But the thing is, concepts had different formations. So even though it was the same concept, the
like
same
a cover play, three, like, hey, they're playing a cover three. I need to do this on this play.
Sure. That was that. Those are route adjustments. But also the concepts, basically the base play. So we have a post here, then we have a dig here, then we have a drive here, but in a different formation, you could be a different agent. So, okay, normally I would be the outside guy and have the post, but now I'm the inside guy, so I have the dig. You see what I'm saying? So just understanding the concept, so in case you're in a different position on the field, you can still run the same route. So it was like a comprehensive understanding that you had to have in order to truly excel in the offense.
Do you like coaches over, because I've heard a lot of times in football, a kid will play over another kid, even though the kid not playing is more talented because he just won't remember the plays. Does that happen?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And that's the reason why a lot of talented freshmen, the All-Americans, et cetera, are the reason I didn't play, right, my freshman year, because you're not used to 1,176 different ways to run a play. Like, there's paralysis by analysis. You get on the floor, they say down, set. You don't know what to do. Your heart starts beating. You run the wrong route. Coach pulls you out the game, and you lose confidence, right? Like, that's how it happens. So it's definitely a humbling experience because you're getting introduced. Okay, like, this is big boy ball. But it teaches you how to prepare, right? You have to really know it, again, like the back of your hand. You have to take this thing seriously if you eventually want it to be a job.
That is insane.
Yeah.
I don't understand how a freshman quarterback comes in with a veteran team and produces. Aren't you basically going backwards?
That's why they redshirt a lot of the freshman quarterbacks, or even Bryce Young. Like, Bryce Young, this was his first year playing, right?
Yeah.
And he played last year a little bit, but he was behind Mac Jones, right? So it's hard to be a true freshman. I don't really know of any true freshmen that come in and just dominate, because literally that's the hardest job. You have to know not just what you got. You got to know what everybody else got, right? You have to know the protection. You have to know the coverage, right? So much is going on in your mind, and you're not just going to know that straight out of high school as an 18-year-old. You need practice, right? You need reps. You need experience. So
they did the one-and-done rule with football. I mean, football would be a mess.
Yeah, there's no chance they'll do
would
that.
Would be a mess. But through the NFL Combine, you made it through. You got picked up by the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
You had to get an agent, something that was a first for you.
Sure.
And did you have anyone tell you, recommending, this is what you need to look for in an agent?
Yeah. So I, well, you get the agent, honestly, way before, right, the draft. I signed, like, I was talking to agents, like, right after my junior year.
Were they just like sliding in, like, you're doing real estate? Like, hey, be me, like, pick me. Or are they just,
yeah,
your coaches? Your coaches recommend?
Yeah, coaches recommend, friends of friends, etc. They'll find their way to you. But at the end of the day, you're the one that ultimately makes the decision. You know, they'll find the way to contact you. But yeah, you know, you sign with your agent. And I mean, I had a lot of friends, obviously, that were in the NFL. I don't like to name drop or whatever, but some that people probably know and that, you know, you're doing well, etc. And I'd ask them, like, hey, like, what do you look for in your agent? And the most important thing is somebody that's going to be able to, in my opinion, help you when you're down, right? In the sense, like, let's say, like, you're hurt or you're cut or for some reason your value is in question. You want somebody that has the connection or has the, you know, mouthpiece, if you will, to kind of put you back in place to show people who you are. Because it happens. The NFL is up and down, and there's a lot more downs than there are ups. You guys see all the good things, but you don't see the disappointment. You don't see the grind. You don't see the trudge up the hill. You just see when we're on the mountaintop. But it's a grind, you know, when we're not on TV. It's a grind. You see what I'm saying? You know, Monday through, you know, in the NFL, Sunday, Saturday, right? It's a grind. It's not easy. And there's a lot of things that we're going through mentally, physically, emotionally that we have to overcome in order to perform for you guys, you know, on Sundays.
Right.
So yeah, having an agent, again, I said, that can, you know, help you when you're in a compromised situation and has the connection, has the network, has the, not clout. I don't really feel like that's the word that I'm using, but the respect from GMs and, you know, front office executives to,
right,
you know, help, you know, restore you to where you were.
Do you think with, well, NIL deals are going on in college, but the reason why people would want to leave college is you can get brand deals and you can make money and your agent will go out and find you endorsements.
Sure.
For guys that don't get drafted and picked in the lottery, I feel like a lot of the athletes out there's mindsets get cut in half. You have an agent trying to get you deals, but at the same time, you're trying to make a team.
Sure.
Does your agent do anything for trying to get you? Like, what does an agent have to do with the coaches? Or he's just there to get you deals, there to get you any of the cleats and uniform stuff that you need. All of your ability goes with the team, and that's up to you if you make the team or not. Is that kind of the process?
It depends on the agency that you sign with. Some agencies are more marketing focused, so they might not be great with contracts, right? In the sense they know how to structure contracts to make sure you get more guaranteed money. But they are great with marketing, right? And making sure that, okay, like when you're a rookie, you can do something with, you know, the car dealership to have, you know, a car that you can rent for the first year that you're there. Like, they're good with that. It's different strokes for different folks. Like, these agencies are different companies. You see what I'm saying? And different companies have different value offerings, right? But yeah, I feel like how it works best is you just focused on what you need to do, and then your agent will focus on what he needs to do. I don't feel like it's the job of, you know, the athlete to, you know, try to get too into the extracurricular affairs. That's his agent's job to bring him those opportunities. Because again, if that sense is that, okay, like this guy is just, you know, focused on what he can get from football and not football itself, then eventually you're going to end up getting weeded out.
Right. Does he find you like training places like Proactive Sports in LA? I know you were training in Scottsdale, you said?
Yeah, at Exos.
So did he find that, or did you find that? Or
so I was actually supposed to, they had a deal, my agency had a deal with Mamba Sports Academy. I think they call it,
I work there.
I think they call it something else now. They don't call it Mamba anymore.
It's called Sports Academy.
Yeah, Sports Academy. LA
Sports Academy to Mamba, back to Sports Academy.
Sure. Yeah, so that's where all the people that sign my agency go to train. But I had advice from some of my friends, again, that are in the NFL, that told me that the Exos in Phoenix is the best place to train. So I elected to go there, and my agent, you know, signed off on it. So
amazing. So what about like training camp? How was your experience with your first NFL training camp? What's it different compared to college? college training camp, which is in the fall. I mean, walking into a college, we're now walking into an NFL team, they're two different things.
Sure.
More NFL, you any second now you can get cut. You can get traded. You know, things can happen. Your life is your salary. Like, you are your own salary. If you make it, you make it. If you don't, you don't.
Sure.
What was your experience with the Jacksonville Jaguars and training camp and just an eye-opening, hey, I'm in the NFL now and I'm dealing with this?
Yeah, man, it's really big boy ball. You know what I mean? When you're in college, you have at least, in a sense, some help. But like, if you think about it, in the NFL, you're an independent contractor. You just kind of go there on your own. And yeah, you definitely have people's support from afar and they're there with you in spirit. But for the most part, it's just you. So you have to be on top of everything. You have to be on top of your rehab. You have to be on top of your study. Like, this is the moment which everything was for, right? So there's a ton of pressure and there's not a lot of leeway, because if you have a couple of bad practices, they'll cut you and bring somebody else in like that. They don't waste time in the NFL because there's such a high demand, right? Such a high demand and such a high supply, right? There's not that many slots. So it definitely makes you on your P's and Q's, but it brings the best out of you, you know, just because you know that there's very little room for error.
But now on to our favorite last question I always ask, and I kept saying it wrong the last couple episodes about when you're 10 to 13 years old. Okay, and I realize that doesn't make sense. Flashback to your high school days. You are now older. You are, what, 9 years older now than you are in high school?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. You have a lot of experiences, a lot of do's and don'ts. What would you do differently talking to your younger high school self back to your sophomore year? Would you change anything?
Yeah, I mean, not even sophomore year, but I'd just say probably like junior and senior year when I started to, you know, start to see the fruits of my labor and started to experience the success that I, you know, always hoped to experience, is just, you know, just maintain an attitude of humility. I feel like the higher you go, the humbler you have to be, because, you know, it's a privilege really to have that. And if you take it for granted, what you're granted will be taken, and you see that all the time, you know. If you abuse power will end up abusing you by throwing you back down to the bottom from which you came. And I definitely feel like, you know, it's hard, especially when you're young, you haven't had the time to develop character yet, where you feel like you're the man and stuff like that, and you're always combative and you're kind of insecure because you're looking, is this person disrespecting me, are they trying to slight me, I'll show them who I really am, you know. And just not maintaining that attitude, because I feel like I eventually ended up paying for that. And I just wish I would have had that wisdom to apply that knowledge and, you know, just shrug things off and, you know, just, again, maintain that attitude of humility.
That's perfect. Yeah. I think I would do the exact same with my younger self. A lot of things I would change, but also you live in the moment. So things happen for a reason and you learn from your experiences. And I think a lot of your high school experiences, you kind of well-rounded you to the person you are today. So. Yeah. Without those, you probably wouldn't be here right now.
That's facts.
Which is really cool. But now on to the fun questions.
Sure.
Fun questions, Bailey. Do you want to read them, Bailey?
Nah, she can't read.
You want to read? Want to read? Fun questions. What is your favorite movie series?
Favorite movie series is undoubtedly the Avengers Marvel series, and it's not even close, right? So, yeah.
That's all you're going to say about
it? Okay, all right.
Someone that loves the series doesn't talk anything about it.
I didn't want to continue to say if you didn't ask, but yeah, man. And it has a large part to do with, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. I feel like that guy is brilliant, plays, you know, Iron Man to a T.
So Iron Man is your favorite character?
Well, his personification of it. I didn't even really know that much about Iron Man until he played him, you know. What does he say to Captain America? He says, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist. Like, that's like the pinnacle of life. Isn't that what everybody's aspiring to be in a certain sense?
Yeah,
I'd say.
Of course.
You know, so I just feel like, and his just swagger was awesome. He was brilliant. You know what I'm saying? And he was just, it was just the role played to perfection.
So if you had to pick a character to be, you would be Iron Man?
I think so, yeah.
There wouldn't be any other character you would compete with? Like, yeah, maybe this, maybe that.
People say Black Panther, and that's cool and stuff like that, but just Iron Man was a genius, bro. Like, he built all of those suits, and he just was so on top of everything, except for his personal life. That struggled a little bit, but for the most part, man, like, the guy had life by the balls, right? Like, the guy really was in control, and it was just awesome seeing it.
All right, Iron Man it is. I don't really watch the Avengers, so I can't comment on this. Wait, Avengers is Marvel?
Marvel, yeah,
Marvel,
sorry,
yes.
Marvel, the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I'm a DC person.
I've never heard that before ever in my life.
Where's
DC? What's the last movie that they've made? We don't even know, right?
If you had to take a girl on a first date, where would you take her for the food cuisine and why?
Yeah, well, I mean,
without asking her what she likes. This is just pure you.
Sure, yeah, definitely.
Picking what you like.
Yeah, I'm picking what I like, definitely. I feel like I'm trying to give her a good experience, but I have to enjoy it as well. You see what I'm saying? I don't know everything about her, but I know a lot about me, right? I know what I like, and I like, you know, nice things. I like great ambiance. I like, you know, fine dining, etc. So, you know, if we could, and if she was a girl that I was maybe kind of trying to impress or whatever, I would take her to, you know, one of these nice places. I like Mastro's. I've actually been there, you know, a couple of times. Or Ruth Chris is pretty good as well.
Man, you're bougie.
Yeah, there's this, you can call it bougie, but it's just like, I like nice experience. If you're going to do something, you got to do it well, right?
Okay, we're going back to the hometown in Southern Georgia.
In Suwanee, Georgia.
What would you do?
What would I take her? I mean, I was still the same guy. I just had a little less money in my pocket, right? So I probably, where do we go, man?
You take a girl on a date in high school.
In high school, I mean, we had this place called Waffle House. I don't know if you guys
took her
know the
Waffle
House. Waffle
House
is nice, though.
You want some waffles?
It's like a diner that people.
No, I love the Waffle House.
They don't have Waffle House out here, do they?
No, but my cousin's in North Carolina, so okay. I go to Waffle House all the time. It's cheap.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, it's good food. It's 24 hours, right? So I mean, you could sneak out of your house if you want to, and
it was going on a Waffle House date.
Right, right, and stuff like that. So.
I don't really believe in taking a girl on a first date to a meal.
Sure.
Most of the time, she doesn't eat it.
No.
Taking her sushi, I've taken girls out all places. They don't eat it. Why waste money when they're not going to eat?
Yeah, for me, maybe a first date wouldn't be a restaurant. That would probably be like, you know, second or third. You kind of have to earn that. First date could be something simple. But if we're going to a restaurant, those are the restaurants that I would take her to. So.
Sounds good. Guys, if you want to date Josh will take you to Mass Shows.
I don't know about that.
But anyways, this was a great episode, Josh. Thank you for coming on. I'm surprised we actually fit this in. Out of nowhere, he flew into LA for 7 days. So thank you for making the time. And for everyone that doesn't know who you are and wants to follow you on socials, what are your socials?
Sure, man. Yeah. Everything is Josh, J-O-S-H, Bebe, B-H-E, B-H-E, one letter, all lowercase. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram, not on Snapchat, if you want to add me. Actually, never mind. Josh Bebe.
Sounds good. And if you guys want to catch this episode, this is on, you're probably watching right now. It's on YouTube at Mike for Success. We're on Instagram, LinkedIn, all those socials as usual. If you want to catch the last episodes between Kendall Furman, we have, I'm playing out Andrew and Jacob to Justin Bishop to Max Heidegger. All those will be popping up right here. Great episodes if you want to learn about all the other cool things my friends do. So anyways, thanks, Josh, for coming on. Yeah. This is another episode of Mike for Success, and tune in out.